Tonight is Brigitte Ludeking. I'm very excited to introduce her. Brigitte read the words, "To contemplate and share the fruits of your contemplation," in an advertisement for Providence College when she was 17. From that moment on, a fascination with the Dominican charism began, which brought her from her home in Miami, Florida, to Providence, Rhode Island, where she began university studies in theology and philosophy under the friars there. She put away all her books for a time after college to farm and to pray as a contemplative missionary before re-entering society and settling in Nashville. The last couple of years, she has spent apprenticing with the Catholic Psych Institute and hopes to integrate her Dominican vocation with her love of understanding the human person and holding space for his interior life. Brigitte was received into our chapter as a candidate just last month. So let's welcome Brigitte Ludeking.
Thank you. Can you all hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. I've been told a couple of people are like, please make sure you speak into the mic. So I said, okay. First, thank you so much for letting me talk about this. I haven't had a lot of practice articulating what I've been doing the last couple of years, so you guys are kind of my guinea pigs, and I just appreciate that so much. And as Stefano said, I'm just a candidate, so I'm more so inviting you into my discernment of an apostolate, potentially. First, has anybody heard of the Catholic Psych Institute? A couple of you? Okay, not too bad. The Catholic Psych Institute?
Psych?
Mm-hmm, like psychology. I was gonna say, if no one has, then it's okay. If I make mistakes, nobody will notice. It would be great. How many of you trust the field of psychology? It's okay, you can say no. How many of you would trust it if Dominicans were involved? There you go. So that's actually how my story kind of began. I kind of converted. I've been a cradle Catholic, but I would say when I was 13, that's when there was a deepening of my faith the day before my confirmation. Because our school put on this retreat for us kids, and they prayed so much that we would be on fire for this sacrament, and I tell them, thank you, because it worked. On that day, I felt such a deep love, unconditional love from God, and just also a deep sense of the incredible suffering that he endured for us. And that was kind of when I decided that that would be my priority, that God had to be my priority. But something psychologically interesting happened at the same time, which was kind of odd. I was a straight A student, I was a good kid, the teachers liked me, and all of a sudden I was like, wait, God loves me even if I don't have straight A's? And a lot of my responsible executive functioning went down. It was a very weird paradox of me coming to let in God's love and try to be the best that I could be, and then also finding that the things that were once mundane now I had no motivation for them. And this paradox of me making some serious decisions that were, well, at that time, not that serious, but I was living a life that in many ways looked very messy, making decisions that were messing up my life. Anyone with two eyes can see that I don't make the healthiest decisions every time. But I was also trying to really open my heart to integrate the truths of the faith. And now I have a little bit of a better understanding of what that paradox was. So much of my drive for straight A's, for success, for achievement was fear-based, anxiety-driven, the need for my parents to be happy with me, the need to feel like I was doing the right thing. And what happens when you have so much, when your motivation, your psychology is driven by fear, what happens when perfect love casts out fear? Executive functioning can be difficult in somebody who had a story like mine. So I had to try to work at integrating the faith into my life, not just understanding it and willing it, but actually doing a bit of a deeper dive into what my stumbling blocks were. And I wasn't sure where I could go for that, because a secular psychologist would be like, huh? What are you talking about? I am trying, you know, I had wanted to discern religious life, and I had had a really weird experience in another country for a time, and then came the emotional residue of that experience, trying to wonder if I was failing at what God was asking of me. And that caused a deep depression and a kind of pain that I couldn't take to a secular psychologist. And then I also thought, if I go to a priest, then the sacraments are just invaluable, especially confession. If you're dealing with any kind of addiction, with any issue, attack it directly with graces from confession. But I also thought he might not have the expertise to help me and to really hold the depth of pain that was in my interior life. And that's the sad reality, is you can experience both. You can have a deep pain in your interior life. You can have trouble trying to live what we know is true, and also very much be convicted by God's love. So this paradox ended up, I finally found someone. It was a Dominican friar who was a psychologist at Providence College. And I was like, yes, anchored in truth, so I can trust his formation, psychology I can trust, and he has the expertise to help me distinguish. I had questions like, what is my cross versus what is a suffering that I'm supposed to defeat and fix versus, I had all these questions, and I really felt like I needed somebody who could handle both. Now, Dominican friar was that person for me, and that's kind of where my passion started for what I call integration. I'm thinking about fear, and I'm thinking about love, because the Lord made it so simple for us. To become saints, we have to love God above all things. We have to love our neighbor as we love ourselves. That's a relational call. Our relationship with God, our relationship with others, our relationship to ourselves. If you don't like yourself very much, you are handicapped in a third of what that tiny commandment is for us, to become a saint. We have to first acknowledge that we have a relationship to ourselves. We do. We think about ourselves in a particular way. We have judgments about ourselves. All of that can be broken open, evaluated, if it needs to be. But it should be done in a place that is safe, that you can trust, where there's a loving relationship to help model for you how to actually integrate God's love. This is what Catholic therapy is supposed to be. And it's not even legal in many spaces, because you can't even talk about God. It's considered a bias, it's considered immoral, it's considered corrupt on the part of the person, when what we're made for, our fulfillment, is in that relationship with God. But we have psychological obstacles that block us from opening ourselves up to the things we are called to be, to actually love others, to enter into a relationship with others, to have love animate everything that we do. When I was so trained to operate from fear, that was a psychological problem. when I have a friend, one of my good friends, who used to pedal his bike up the hill twice a day to go to church for confession every day. Scrupulosity. But not just scrupulosity. It's obsessive compulsive disorder manifesting in the spiritual life for him. Because the compulsion, the ritual of confession over and over again brings relief to the anxiety that people with OCD struggle with. And that is easier for him than actually trusting in the mercy of God. Our relational templates, what's amazing is the Lord invites us to die to self. But psychologically, we're oriented towards self-protection. We have a survival instinct, but we have to die to self. So I think about that differently than I once did. A lot of us think it means not doing what we want, giving into what the other person wants, die to self. Not always. We can be submissive in a way that isn't fully free at times. And what I learned, one of the many things I learned, I told Stefano, there's just so many things I want to break open like a teacher, just because I thought they were so cool. What part of our personality is formed by mom? What part of our personality is formed by dad? How we are, like I said, oriented towards self-protection looks very predictable. Each person is unique and unrepeatable, but our defense mechanisms are not. So, before I nerd out on some of the things I've learned, let me actually talk about the Catholic Psych Institute so you know where to go as well. The Catholic Psych Institute started off with just therapy, but they saw some problems with it, because if you sit down once a week with somebody, you give them a manicured presentation of what you remember happened throughout your week. Maybe it's cathartic for you, and you try to remember what you learned and you move on. Then they launched a different model. I thought it was weird at first, not gonna lie. I was like, what are you doing? They took an app called Voxer, which functions like a walkie-talkie / audio recordings app. And now they have mentors that will walk with you daily. You have up to 15 minutes to send a message, a recording, and then they have 24 hours to respond to you. If it sounds weird because it's too much technology, I get it, but I had to remind myself, like a good Dominican, we can extract what's valuable from technology, qualify it, add distinctions, and make it effective for people. And so this, I think, is a good use of technology. It's efficient because it's when you have the time. We have a lot of priests that use it. We have religious that use it. It doesn't take them away from their assignments in any way. And because it's daily, we pick up on your patterns faster. We actually get to see you in the moment of crisis. If you're boxing at 3 a.m, because that's when you're upset, or whatever, I actually get to experience that and pick up on the patterns. So it's called IDDM, and I brought brochures for that in case anybody is interested in checking that out. The second thing that they do that I have found really amazing and what I tried is the Catholic Psych Model of Applied Personalism, which is the course of studies that I've been doing in anthropology, spirituality, and psychology, integrated. But it is brutal at the same time. Because as you're studying and learning, you have a mentor that's helping you process everything and relating it to you to see what your defense mechanisms are. So many people come to therapy because they're experiencing depression and anxiety. What a lot of us don't know, I'm nerding out a little bit, what a lot of us don't know is that depression and anxiety are not the disorder in and of themselves. They are moods that are byproducts of an incongruence between the person's internal archetype and the external environment. If you are somebody that has learned to go through life having as much control as you can, and that worked for you for a time, you learned that somehow. We all come from broken schools of love, and that's one of your defense mechanisms. You're not going to feel depressed or anxious if you are CEO of your company and everybody does what you say and you're in control of operations and that's the life you've built. But you will, it will break down, that coping mechanism will break down when your circumstances change. And that's why when people are in a crisis, they come. Or if you're histrionic, let's say, that's somebody who needs to be the center of attention. They're charming, they're dramatic, they're loud. Everybody looks at them, they're beautiful. You're not experiencing depression or anxiety when you're at the Academy Awards accepting an Oscar and giving your speech. But you'll start to if you get canceled or your looks start to change or whatever, you know, whatever it is. And that's where psychology can be helpful because the defense mechanisms are actually pretty predictable. So in this program, it's like being stripped naked because this is a training program that helps you accompany others. It helps you to love others. And so it breaks you open on everything that you do that you could be better at. And the ways that you learn to cope with the deficiencies that were in your school of love. Double checking my timer. Okay, not too bad. It's hard to be told, hey, you can be manipulative. You can be controlling. You behave in this way. It's hard to realize that. But you know what? When it's in a relationship that is safe and loving, you can have the courage to face those things. I never knew going into it because I entered this program like a Dominican. I was like, give me the blueprint of all my faults and a game plan for changing. Teach me everything I need to know about the human person and I will try to fix it and just learn everything I can. And then to my surprise, it was like, no, we are wounded in relationship and we're healed in relationship. And our pathologies come out in the way we relate to people. So I have to enter into a relationship and then people can see what comes out when I'm in a group, what comes out when I'm with my supervisor, how I've learned to cope, how I've learned to defend myself. There's a part of me that wants to go into a whole, one of these days I'll nerd out on a whole talk on the different fears that we have. Fear of abandonment, fear of rejection, fear of failure, fear of being controlled. All of these things look unique in how we develop protections around that. Unique to each other, but predictable in people. And so it's been amazing to kind of look at what mine have been. And that program, that training program has been beautiful. But the relational aspect is the most important, and I wasn't expecting that. It makes sense, though. 10 years ago, when I was at Providence College, I was a senior, and I shared a connecting bathroom with a junior, a young opera singer. And one day I was walking in the hallway, I'd never met her, and she stopped me, and she introduced herself, and then told me her whole life story, right then and there. It's extroverts, right? I was like, this works for me. The only way an introvert can make friends is when they get adopted by an extrovert. So I'm sitting there and I'm listening and she's so joyful and she's talking my ear off. And then she tells me this trauma that she had when she was 5 years old. And it made her unable to be by herself with an older male. If it was a student, if it was someone her age or below, it was fine. But if he was older, she couldn't do it. And so you can imagine eventually she will age out of this problem. But for now, as a student in college, she couldn't go to office hours. And she's telling me this story, and then she starts to say it with joy and this like extroverted joy. And I'm like, the words aren't matching the tone here. And she says, "Don't you get it? I am finally feeling relief from my symptoms." "Oh, that's great. Do you know what it was?" She said, "Yeah, all the Dominican friars on campus. Just being surrounded by them. I can't tell you what a blessing it was to go to Providence College. Cost a crap ton of money, though." But it was, for someone like her, who had had the trauma she had had, to be surrounded by good, godly men, anchored in truth, stable, kind, loving, did more for her than any of us expected. And I remember the day that she squeezed my hand and said, "I think I can do this. I think I can really do this." And she entered a confessional for the first time in a decade. The power of relationship. We are wounded in relationship. None of us had Mary and Joseph as our biological parents. We all have miseducation. But we can be healed in relationship. So those are two things that Catholic Psych has done. And I'm a work in progress. Like I said, the reason I came even into this was because I wanted to make sense of the mess, of the pain in my own life. Another thing that they do that I like, I'm just letting you know, is the Integrated Life Foundation for priests. Because there's green light and there's red light for priests. There's help when they are in crisis, but there's not a lot of help when they're just burning out, starting to feel the burnout. And I had some statistics that my friend was showing me. I should have asked him where he got them from, but it was like 60% of priests experience burnout. 24% feel that seminary actually prepared them for everything that they face. And this is where Father Sam Kachuba comes in, because he went through this whole training program and was so on fire that he wants to help other priests. And he has stepped up to the plate. They want to get priests, other priests to mentor them, who have gone through the whole training in psychology, in anthropology, in spirituality, done the work on themselves, and now want to help, support, and provide this loving relationship to other priests who have a hard time admitting that they need help. They don't want to get reassigned. They don't want to look bad. It's hard. I've seen religious go through the program too. I love the sisters that are in the program. So they have scholarships for them, of course, to subsidize these trainings and subsidize this help. So the Integrated Life Foundation is the charitable branch of the Catholic Psych Institute, which is really cool. Let me see. Been talking for quite a bit. Are you guys tracking with me so far? Everything's okay? Questions. I'm thinking, the first question, I'm going to anticipate some of the questions first. What does it cost? Right? When it was psychotherapy, it was like $200 a session. They've changed all of that now that it's this daily model of steady accompaniment. And the range is pretty wide, because if you work with a student, it's a monthly bill, by the way. It's a monthly bill. If you work with a student, it's in the 400s, but I've seen it drop to the 200s. If you're working with a graduate, it'll be more than that, like double that. And I've seen it go higher for the doctors that are there. So go through like the intake, talk to them about what it is you need, and they'll work with you. It's kind of like a little bit malleable in that way. What? I feel like I had another question that people ask me. Oh, what do I see a lot of? I've been asked that before. Are you interested in that answer?
Yes.
Okay. Sure. What do I see a lot of? There's a lot of OCD. I never realized when I started studying how prevalent this was. And it's an enormous cross for people, an enormous cross in the mind. And among Catholics, it often looks like scrupulosity. There's also a lot of people with sex addictions that they want to change because society tells them, it's fine, watch pornography, you're fine. It's not. It's eating away at you and your capacity to be in relationship and to make a sincere gift of yourself and receive love from someone. And they know that. They have a conscience about it. So we get like people with unwanted behaviors like that that they want help with. Me personally, I'm new, still haven't even graduated. I've had some clinical experience a little bit. And what I see the most of is people who have a desire for connection and relationship, but an extremely high anxiety and expectation that they're going to be hurt. And so it manifests in a lot of interior chaos and a push-pull chaotic dynamic that can wreck people's lives. So that's what I've seen a lot of. But there's one of these days, like I said, one of these days I'd love to come in and give like just a brief talk on like the 10 most common personality disorders, because even though we don't have the full-blown disorder, we still use those defenses. And they're organized around different fears. And so everybody comes in with them. Everybody comes in with them. And JP2, by the way, nobody told me JP2 was such a psychologist. Who has read Person and Act? Oh, there you go. I was like, I didn't really get it. I need a smarter Dominican to explain it to me, because I had to read some of it. And what he says about the subconscious and reflexive consciousness and reflective consciousness and how we take in data, but how the unconscious influences how we see it, how we perceive it, all of it, like he's calling us to integration, to be free human beings, self-determinate human beings. We need to be integrated, which means allowing what's held in the unconscious to surface to conscious awareness. Because we can be aware of what all the influences are on us and then have the freedom to respond to it. The other thing that I think doesn't often get said is that healing is also God's prerogative. And some symptoms never go away. This is not about taking a pill and attacking a symptom. Understanding your story, understanding the ways you've been hurt, is a way of looking at your cross, picking it up, and following after Christ. And he wants to cooperate with your healing because he wants union with you. He doesn't want you to have these obstacles coming to him and loving others. But it's true that some struggles are lifelong. And so we're not in the business of decreasing symptoms, but we are in the business of increasing peace. That is possible. How much time do I have left? Yeah, I have like 7 minutes. Questions?
What do you see as the relationship between the psychology and spiritual direction? Because it seems to me there has to be some sort of crossover between the two.
Yeah, that's a great, great question. At Catholic Psych, we say it matters where the person is at in their journey. You go elsewhere and they're gonna say, spiritual direction is about your relationship with God, therapy is about your relationship to other things. That never worked for me. But sometimes you have somebody who is not yet open to addressing things directly in the spiritual life, and you have to kind of walk with where they're at on their journey. So there are distinctions. In fact, this has been one of the most beautiful parts of the program, especially in the third semester where we're looking at consolation, desolation, different parts of spirituality, what's not in our control, what is, but also mindfulness, which is brain exercises to help you be more aware of the present moment and how that can aid you in even acknowledging what's going on in your spiritual life, to actually follow the rules that St. Ignatius puts out. So I think they're very related, but they are distinct. And I know that because I remember I could experience God's grace and God's love for me, and I could also experience a mess of things. Just like you have people that are battling an addiction, battling a whole host of things, despite trying to be faithful. I don't know if that answers your question. It's a little bit, I'm saying more of the same, but they're distinct, but they are so related that we try to treat the whole person. Yeah, in my training so far, which I want you guys to know I'm at the very beginning, JP2 is the model because he took Thomism, objective truth, and also phenomenology, the experience of the person. So he's the one that they really like. Father Benedict Rochelle is also great, but there's a book that I think is a great place to start, which is The Context of Holiness by Father Mark Foley. I forget what religious order he's actually in, but it's on the psychological dimension of Saint Therese and also an understanding of how our wounds are like part of the cross and part of the way, like they make up the context. Literally for our holiness. And I think that's a great book for people to pick up, and it's really small. But if I think of anything else, I'll let you know. Yes, my sister has that one, and whenever I walk into her house, I get intimidated at how big and how really, like, it's almost like an encyclopedia that you move through. You had a question.
You used the phrase, that's JP2. Is that like his body of work, or is it a specific piece of work? What is JP2?
Yeah.
I know he's the Pope, but...
No, that's a great question. So we actually did a lot of different things because we started with his plays, believe it or not. He was a playwright, and there are things that he breaks open in those stories. And that's how we dipped our toe in there. I could nerd out for a little while. But then there was that whole section on person and act and personalism. Personalism is the main thing.
So when you use the phrase, that's JP2, is that like saying that's Ignatian? What does it mean, that's JP2?
That's JP2.
You use that term a couple of times, and I don't know what that means.
I got to see exactly how I said it, but what we've taken from John Paul II, we've taken different things from him, but when we're looking at marriage and family, we've pulled from the theology of the body. Okay. When we're looking at his plays, we're looking again at love and relationship. When we are looking at person and act, it's more philosophy and more like that dry psychology of understanding human anatomy and even how the brain takes in information and how the brain reflects different things. You're telling me the time. So there's different things that pull from different areas.
It's a body.
Yeah, yeah. But what I remember them being such a big fan of is that objective truth is important, is still important, whereas secular psychology kind of doesn't hold on to that. Yeah. But in psychology, it's so subjective that you need to be able to have both. And his philosophy gives us that.
It's all over the secular stuff that I've seen, but then I've seen some Catholic psychologists kind of suggest that there's ways it can be used, but then I've seen like Dan Burke and the Abel Institute like, oh, it's Buddhist, stay away. I'm wondering what you might have thought about that.
Yeah. Because it had Buddhist origins, because Buddhism uses a lot of practices that are mindful, the distinctions are so important. And when they're made, there's actually a book that I like that I trust called The Mindful Catholic, which helps make those distinctions. Oh, that was my Downton Abbey ring. Because the goal is not to empty the mind of all thoughts, and it's not this like lack of distinction and unity, which you get in Buddhism. The mind will think thoughts the way the heart beats. It is natural to do that. Mindfulness, when it's done properly in a way that Catholics can trust, is simply training the brain to be aware of the present moment, because the mind and the sympathetic nervous system will activate without distinction whether there's a threat or a perceived threat. And sometimes our own emotions can be considered threatening. So mindfulness, whether it's just breathing techniques or just focusing on something, helping to anchor you in the present moment, helps you to slow down, to really be aware of what's happening. And that's just helpful for the brain. And it doesn't have the connotations of, it doesn't ask anything of you that is incompatible with our Catholic faith. But it's always good to be aware of what the source is when you're looking at different things or reading different things. So it's a fair question. That's good. All right.